Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Friday, March the 9th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Your second daily dose of happy for the day. And happy Friday, everybody. The work week is over for most people, at least for the people who do the Monday through Friday routine. Obviously, not everybody works the 9 to 5, but if you are working the 9 to 5, you're very close to being done for the week. So celebrate.
Yay!
Hooray!
I'm a nine-to-fiver who never manages to get off at five.
Yeah, I think there are a few of those in the world, actually.
And but, I start at eight.
And you start at eight, yes. Yeah, I actually had one of those jobs. It was a nine-to-five job. I ended up working 80 hours a week, and I said, what happened to nine-to-five? I didn't stay in that job very long.
One of the really cool things, and I will take credit for co-creating this, is when I got the job that I currently have, I remember talking to HR about, you know, the particulars, and they said that this would be salary. And I said, okay, so that means no overtime. And they said, that's correct, no overtime. Well, that was a bummer to me because I love overtime.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
overtime,
sure.
You make a lot more money. So, and I was used to always having jobs where there was overtime, which always gave me the opportunity to like increase my income. So I'd been there maybe 10 days and I received this email. And it says, please fill out the following timesheet and have your manager approve it.
Mm-hmm.
So I go and I look at this timesheet and I'm like, this gives the opportunity for overtime. Because if there wasn't, I would not be filling out a timesheet. I would always get paid the same amount of money every paycheck, right?
Well, maybe.
I contact my boss and I said, what's up with this? And he goes, I guess you're eligible for overtime. I went, yippee!
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, once you've been in a place long enough, you kind of start to feel out the tolerances for the company and their budgets and that kind of thing. Let's just say this. I work so much overtime and have done it so consistently that in the last 5 years, I've never had a paycheck where I can honestly know what my take-home pay would be without overtime. And I get paid twice a month, but there has never been even a week, or I should say a two-week period, that I didn't have overtime. And the only time I don't have it is when I'm on vacation.
So in other words, going on vacation is a bummer.
You know what? From a financial perspective, it is, and it used to bother me. But I'm like, but I really want time off where I get paid. And I'm like, all right, I'll just have to suck it up and not get paid extra. That's so funny that you caught on to that, because that's how I used to feel.
Well, when you said that they had given you a timesheet and that you said, well, I'm getting paid no matter what, I thought, I've actually had 40-hour week jobs where I had to fill out a timesheet anyway.
Really?
Yeah. It was usually in cases where my hours were being billed, so it made sense.
Mm.
But I was still I was an exempt salary, which was not always nice because then there was overtime. I wasn't getting paid for it, but they were.
Well, and you know, my coworkers, you know, they get paid a whole lot more than I do because they're all executives and blah, blah, blah. But they all work 60 to 80 hours a week. And at least for me, I know I don't get paid as much as them, but I like knowing that every time I'm working extra, I'm getting paid for it. It just feels better.
Sure. Of course it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been on that other side of the fence where you're working exempt and you're working the long hours. That I told you about the one where I was working 80 hours a week. That was salary exempt, no overtime. And let me tell you, that really sucked. It was really, really bad. So, yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from. Yeah. On the other hand, I didn't stay there very long. And when I left, I predicted they'd be out of business in 6 months, and it took five. So, you know, it does have a plus side.
So, Walt, have you had any wonderful wins today?
Oh, it's Friday. That's my win for the week. I mean,
that's
let alone
your
for,
win
today.
For today.
I mean, this is a great day. The sun is shining. You know, good things are happening. This is a good day.
Well, and for those that work Monday through Friday, I would imagine right now there's a sense of relief coming because people will be getting off soon, and that is a nice thing. So it's a win for many people. I'm totally with you.
Oh, absolutely. And those are the kinds of things that we really do need to celebrate. I mean, yes, I'm kind of making a big deal about it, but you have to make a big deal about it. Even little things like that that are wins, you have to celebrate, because that's one of the key things you have to do, right, in order to push yourself up the emotional scale. That's one of, like, the things that you do.
So I can piggyback on that in terms of things to celebrate, and it's in my update on Project X.
Okay.
This is kind of a continuation of yesterday, and I do celebrate what I experienced. I was engaged in an email exchange with somebody, and I know that when my the door closes on one experience and it opens up to the new experience, this particular person is somebody who will not be part of my life anymore, not on a regular, consistent basis. And in the exchange, I was just getting really teary-eyed and feeling just the sadness of the loss of our you know, constant connection.
Right.
And when I got, you know, finished the email and turned my computer off, I just like boo-hooed. I just went into tears. I was shocked. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, why am I crying? I mean, I nothing is solid yet. And I thought, what came to me is, no, it is. And I have, I get very emotional when things change. Even if they're changes that I love, I still get really emotional over it. I mean, I remember when I left a job a long time ago and I could not stand being at that job anymore. And even though I was thrilled to not be working there, I was so sad to miss the people. I was so sad because my interactions with them would now be limited. And it's kind of like, you know, it's easy to talk about in these terms. When you leave a job, the thing that you have in common with a lot of people is the work. And now
That's
if
true.
You don't have a reason to connect with them over the work, it kind of tests the limits of how friendly are you really with that person? And you know you're going to be talking to them a whole lot less. As I was just kind of thinking it all through and just kind of leaning into my inner being, saying, hey, what's up? I was kind of getting the sense that I'm processing the emotional shift in advance, because then by the time it's time to close the door on one thing and have the door open to the new thing, it won't be such a shock to my emotional system.
Okay.
Because I will have integrated much of the shift in advance. So for that, I am truly grateful that that's how it's working for me right now.
Well, that's good. I mean, if you had been telling me something like this, say, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, my reaction would have been bewilderment. That, you know, you're like, oh, you're one of those women who just reacts to everything or something like that. That's about the extent to which I would have given it any credit. Now that I have a pretty good understanding of what Abraham teaches and how this whole LOA thing works, now that I understand that emotion is what happens when your inner being is either in or out of alignment with your physical being, well, now it makes sense to me. Because the moment that you make a change like that, you're going to have some kind of emotional reaction. Now, is my emotional reaction on the same level as what yours is according to what you're describing? In most cases, probably not. But to be honest, yeah, I think I have had emotional reactions every time I've had a significant life change that went on. And some of them I had a pretty strong reaction, others not so strong, but it was always there. You know, so
I mean, I remember when my husband and I went through our divorce, I think he said this beautifully. He said, I am going to so terribly miss your family because they've been my family. And I said to him, I know my family will deeply miss you as well. Because it's such a part of who we are or who we were.
Sure.
That this Christmas, it was really cool because, you know, a bunch of us adults were sitting around the table and we're talking and all of a sudden my cell phone goes off. And it was my ex-husband. And he just said, Merry Christmas and tell your whole family I said hello. And that was such a warm feeling to know that even though he and I aren't married anymore, he still feels connected enough that he wanted to be a part of us for the day. And what was so fun is my sisters then grabbed my cell phone and they started sending him messages. And then my niece was doing it. And before you knew it, it was like he really was there. It's just we were all texting, and it was very fun.
That is good.
Anyway, but it kind of goes back to, you know, when life things happen, there are changes that kind of, they're unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
And him
mm-hmm.
not being a part of our family was kind of an unavoidable
yeah.
part of our divorce.
Sure.
And I miss seeing his family too, you know, but it doesn't mean that I am going to, I mean, it would be awkward to reach out to all of his family members on a regular basis because they're his family.
That's true. Yep. That's very true. So we are continuing our exploration of the law of attraction, the basics of the teachings of Abraham, and we're actually nearing, we're not quite there, but we're nearing the end of part two. We're on a bunch of these little one- and two-page question-answer things that Jerry did with Abraham, and the one that we're on right now is entitled, Which is More Moral, Giving or Receiving?
Ooh, and when that's kind of juicy.
Well, it is. I have to honestly tell you, though, when I first read it, I said, why do people care? And I said, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, of course, lots of people do care about that. Because that's not a question I would think to ask. It's not a question that would occur to me. But yes, most people would probably be very concerned about that. So I don't know why I said that.
I think giving, receiving, and the right and wrongness of it, I think that's a very human thought. It's a very human consideration.
I guess it is. I mean, for me, giving is just giving and receiving is receiving. And while there's an emotion attached to that, I never think about it in terms of being moral. But I understand people do, so that makes it valid.
Okay. Well, let's see how Jerry poses the question.
Okay. So Jerry says, so you would seem to see as much. Did I say that right? So you would seem to see as much as that is right and joyful in giving as in receiving. In other words, you don't see one as morally superior to the other?
And Abraham says, because the powerful law of attraction, no, because of the powerful law of attraction, whatever you are giving by way of your vibrational offering, you are receiving. The law of attraction always accurately sorts things out and brings to everyone the matching product of their thoughts. So when you give a thought of well-being, you always receive the matching equivalent. When you offer thoughts of hatred, the law of attraction cannot bring you loving results. That defies the law. Often when people speak of giving and receiving, they are referring to gifts of action or material things. But the law of attraction is not responding to your words or actions, but instead to the vibration that is at the basis of those words and actions. Let us say that you see those who are in need of something. Perhaps they have no money, transportation, or food. And as you see them, you feel sad because you are focused on their lack and activating within your own vibration. And from your place of sadness, you offer them the action of money or food. Now, that in itself, that setup, I think that's very common. That's kind of the, you know, the homeless person who's hanging out on the street corner asking for something and somebody gives them a, you know, helps them out or buys them, you know, a lunch. So I think this is a very real something that we're talking about here.
That's true. Although I think we also have to put it in the proviso that there are many people who are in that position who have other stuff going on where they're hardly even paying attention to the food part. But nevertheless, your point's valid.
Okay. So to go on, it says, the vibration that you are transmitting is actually saying to them, I do this for you because I see you cannot do this for yourself. Your vibration is actually focused upon their lack of well-being, and therefore, even though you have offered money or food through your action, your dominant offering is perpetuating their lack. That's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
That's not something we think about or in that way. So I'm really curious to see where Abraham takes this.
Well, I've thought about it in the past, actually. In fact, Louise and I have talked about it, wondering, there's one particular person who works for her that we've been trying to help get through the winter, because he and his mother have been in a really rough place, to say the least. And he's even acknowledged that, you know, very grateful that we've been helping him out because he wasn't sure how he was going to get through the winter. So I'm glad that we helped. But we also ask ourselves this question, the question that's starting to be posed here, which is, are we helping him when we're helping him? We want to be. We certainly want to be. We want him to be helped, but does it really help him? And I think for the most part, we conclude that, yes, it really, really does. But we're always having to be a little bit cautious about it because we certainly don't want to do something that we feel like is being helpful and it's actually working against him.
You know, I kind of think it depends on, and I don't know what Abraham's about to say, so I'm going to say this in advance, but I think it depends on the receiver. So you're gifting to this gentleman, and I would think it would be dependent upon how he receives it in terms of whether you're really helping him or not.
Mm.
You know, yeah. If his thoughts are, yeah, give it to me because I'm a lazy son of a gun and I don't want to do anything for myself.
Which is not him at all.
Which then, if in that scenario, I would say, yeah, you're really not helping him. But if it's somebody who really is needing a hand up while they're working their best to help themselves, then I would think that that's actually a gift from the universe helping him in his time of need.
And just to put in a little extra footnote to it, this particular gentleman, like I said, he works for my wife's gardening services business. And literally everybody on the team will agree he is the hardest worker of everybody on the team.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm curious now. I want to see what Abraham goes on to say. So they say, it is our encouragement that you take the time to imagine those people in a better situation. Practice the thought of their success and happiness in your own mind. And once that is the dominant vibration that you hold for them, then offer whatever inspired action you now feel. In that case, because of the dominant vibration of your being, as you are holding them as your object of attention, you will attract a matching vibration of well-being from them. In other words, you will uplift them. You will assist them in finding the vibration that matches their desire for well-being instead of the vibration that matches their current situation. In our view, that is the only kind of giving that has value.
And that's good to hear that. That's really good to hear
that. There's more to come, but how does that line up with the gifting that you're doing right now?
Really, really well. Really well. Because first of all, he has been extremely grateful for the help that we've been giving. And as you might imagine, with somebody, I won't go into the details of his situation because obviously that's his personal business, but I'll summarize by saying he has had some really bad knocks, really, really bad things happen. I will say that some of them he certainly attracted. I mean, his mindset was not very good for a lot of it. But
well,
nevertheless,
would you say that everything he's attracted? Because isn't that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I guess I was trying to be kind about it. But sure, we attract everything. So yes, that's true.
He may have attracted a lot of it unknowingly, or without awareness, or by default.
I think what I'm trying to say is that when you get into a deep enough negative spiral, even though you're continuing to attract, it's almost like kicking a puppy, you know, to say, well, you're continuing to attract it. Of course you're continuing to attract it, but that doesn't help. You need to find a way out of it. You know, the last thing you need is just somebody to come along and say, well, you know, you keep doing this to yourself. That doesn't really help
right.
you, you know? So I think that's what I was thinking about when I said, you know, it's mostly that stuff that he's attracting. Clearly, it's all stuff that he's attracting. The good part, and this is what I was trying to get to, is when we were helping him, I think both Louise and I were doing what they described here. I know I did it intentionally in a few cases, and I think we were doing it unintentionally as well. Basically, just looking for how, you know, whatever vision we could find about how he and his mom would be in a better place and what would that better place would be, and then try to help him that way. And we hadn't read this part of the book and said, okay, we're going to do it this way. That's just kind of the way we did it. But the net result has been that when he has received help and when his mom have received help, they've been extremely grateful and appreciative about it, despite the fact that you catch them in the same conversation, in a conversation 10 minutes later, and they'll be bad-mouthing somebody. So it made a difference. It didn't. I mean, obviously, we can't change their mindset from moment to moment, but for that one moment, we gave them a positive influence, and that was helpful.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know I learned this concept a long time ago, and it took me a while to be able to figure out how to really put it into practice. But like in my area, oftentimes if I go to the gas station, I mean, not every time, but, you know, often enough, there'll be somebody there, you know, saying, hey, can you help me, you know, get home? And I live on the north side of town and, you know, I need about $5 worth of gas or whatever their story is. And because that happened often enough, I just started going, hey, inner being, let's talk about this,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I don't really know what is my responsibility or do I have any responsibility mm-hmm. just because somebody asked. And so what I've been doing now for quite some time is when somebody asks, I usually see them coming. And I already start asking my inner being, like, you know, is this a person that if I help them, it truly is helping and it's a gift to them? Or is my helping going to be a hindrance? And so I just follow my yes, no signal. And there are times that, you know, I'll say to somebody, sure, I'm happy to put gas in your car. Other times, I remember one time I was on the side of the road. It wasn't a gas station, and it was in a part of town where you have to walk pretty darn far to get to where you need to go. And this person just was on the side of the road, and all she said was, can you help me? And if she said more words beyond that, I was totally unaware. And I reached in my purse, and all I had was a 20, and I felt comfortable giving it to her. And I just said, God bless you. And she said, thank you. But she didn't, why this stands out to me is because the tone in her voice didn't have a sad luck story. She didn't feel like a victim to me. She asked me for a favor, and I granted it, and she was grateful. And it felt more like just a really pleasant handshake kind of thing with somebody.
That's nice.
And I have to say, for a couple of days, I thought about that. I went, that felt like one of the most profoundly joyful giftings I've ever done to a stranger.
Oh, wow.
It felt like such a pleasant exchange. And what she did with it, you know, it had to do with she needed gas for a car. But it's like, it didn't matter because I felt like in the moment, I received the gift. I received something in return because it made me feel so good.
Which is part of what they were talking about in that section too.
Yeah, and I've often thought, well, if I'm in a position that I truly run out of gas or something, you know, I would hope somebody would help me. And I'll tell you that I have an incredibly wonderful track record on the times that I have needed the help of strangers. I have gotten it almost instantaneously. They always gave me more than I ever asked for. And I just felt so incredibly blessed that somebody would give of their time, their body, you know, that they've changed tires for me. They've gone and got gas for me. It's just been miraculous, but I've always been aware of how I ask. And my asking does not ever come from, I'm a victim, because here's what I know I'm cared for. I know my inner being has my back. I know that my inner being knew my need before I even had it, and that a resolution was on its way. And therefore, I'm not coming from, oh my God, this here is my story. This is so horrible. Can you please help me? Because I don't know what I'm going to do. It's like there's no victim in me at all. You know, as a matter of fact, normally it's more like somebody pulls over to the side of the road and say, how can I help you? And I'll say, well, I actually have someone on their way, but I have this tire. And they're like, well, I'll put it on for you. You can tell the person who was on their way. They don't have to come. And I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, happy to do it for you. I'm like, cool.
What you're talking about reminds me of something that happened to me many years ago. I would have to say somewhere around 25, 30 years ago. I was driving home very late from a date. I had dropped her off. It had been a nice date, but it was like a half hour, 45 minute ride home. And on the way home on an interstate highway, it's like midnight. It's middle of January, and the temperature is about minus 15. It's really, really cold out. And as I get to about 3 or 4 miles from home, 5 miles from home, all of a sudden the car dies. I had forgotten to check the gauge. It was out of gas. I pull over to the side. There are no cars. I mean, it is like really, it's after midnight. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. There's no cars on the road, nothing in any direction. The car obviously isn't going to go anywhere. And I know that I am at least a good 2 to 3 miles from anything like a gas station or anything like that. So I get out and I start to walk as fast as I can. Now I am tall and that helps, but I know I'm fighting time here because I'm basically, I'm fairly well dressed, but I'm not dressed for minus 15. You know, I got a coat, I got a hat, I got gloves, but it's not minus 15 type gear that I'm wearing. And I got to get there fast because we're talking about exposure. And once that overcomes you, all kinds of terrible things can happen. Well, I wasn't going to let that into my mind. I was going to just keep going. But as soon as and of course, it's uphill, right? Most of the walk is uphill, just to make it more interesting. right? So I'm walking uphill.
That's why your car said, are you kidding?
Yeah, right.
You don't have put enough gas in me and you want me to go uphill? Uh-uh, we're done.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. So anyway, I'm walking along and I am like, I'm walking at top speed and trying to push myself and I can feel the cold, you know, seeping in. I haven't even gotten, you know, a quarter of a mile and I'm already feeling the cold seeping in. And I know that I'm in a bad place, but I was just determined somehow I was going to blow it out. And within about 10 seconds, a car comes along and stops, pulls over. They roll down the windows and said, do you need a ride?
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. I said, that would be great. And they gave me they didn't just give me a ride to the next exit. They gave me a ride home.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I can't say for sure that they saved my life, but pretty close.
Wow.
And I was very grateful for that.
Yeah, it was definitely a welcomed invitation that they gave you.
Very much so. Yeah. So I don't know why I thought of that. I think it's because I wasn't, it's like the scenario you were describing. I wasn't actively looking for help. I wasn't saying, hey, can you please help me? And here's my sad luck story. In fact, I wasn't even saying, can you please just help me? I'm just going to go. I don't have time to wait. And somebody pulled over. Now, based on what I know now, I'd have to say law of attraction was definitely involved in that. But I mean, at the time, I had no explanation for what happened. I was just appreciative.
Cool. Well, okay. So here's Abraham has not finished talking.
Okay.
We love to interject.
Yeah, we do.
So let's see what else they have to say. They say, so the question is not which is superior, giving or receiving. The question is which is superior, focusing upon what is wanted or what is unwanted?
Mm.
Which is superior, uplifting another by believing in their success or adding to their discouragement, noticing where they are?
Yeah, that's the one that's always concerned me because I don't want to do that second one.
Which is superior, being in alignment with my inner being and then taking action or being out of alignment and taking action? Which is superior, adding to one's success or adding to one's failure? The greatest gift that you can ever give another is the gift of your expectation of their success.
Yeah, I believe that.
There are as many different worlds as there are perceivers, beings, or individuals. You are not here to create one world where everyone is the same, wanting and getting the same. You are here to be that which you want to be, while you allow others to be that which they want to be.
Yeah. And that's never been a difficult concept for me, even long before I knew LOA. That was pretty much my credo for life. So that's one of those things when I hear Abraham say that, it just instantly resonates with me because I don't even have to think twice about it. It just makes total sense.
Well, and to kind of go back to the idea of course, you know, it's easy for us to say we would prefer to uplift than to, you know, kind of wallow in somebody's negative stuff with them. But from a perspective of doing the practicing of that action, that's not always an easy thing. Cause I think there's a lot of, just generality that, you know, if someone says, hey, how are you? And they go, oh, I have the flu. It's the worst flu in the world. You know, I've had this before. And they just start talking about their symptoms. It's so common for the other person to say, oh, I know, I just got over it myself, and it was so bad. And then, boom, the next thing you know, everybody's talking about how many Kleenex tissues they've been through, and they've been to the doctor, and they've been on antibiotics, and it goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not always great at this, but it's something I have been putting forth tremendous conscious effort that when somebody starts telling, like, if sometimes I think asking, how are you, is a loaded question.
It is.
You just don't know how someone's going to respond. Sometimes just to play with something different, you know, I'll just say, hey, what's up? Which kind of is the same thing. But when I say, hey, what's up? With that kind of tone of voice, I don't get as much of the sad stories.
Mm.
But, you know, how are you? Usually they tell you how they are.
You mean they tell you the truth?
Practice for me. You like that? But, you know, have you ever thought about when you ask, how are you? And when people actually have the nerve to answer their question.
Well, not only have I thought about it, I actually have used it as a basis for deciding that I am never going to be old. I may be up there in years, and I may continue to be living a happy lifestyle, but I will never become elderly. I refuse to. Because to me, an elderly person is the person who says, oh, well, my arm isn't working well, and I just can't seem to get around, and you know, my feet have been bothering me for weeks now. I got to go see a podiatrist about it. There's got to be something wrong with my knees. I don't know exactly. It's like one thing after another, and it's always medically oriented. That's why I decided I'm never going to be elderly. I refuse to be. Because, I mean, if that's what being elderly is, I'm out. Forget it. Not interested.
Well, you know, and heaven forbid you should be in a doctor's office.
Yes.
Just something mundane, you know, and you ask someone, how are you? Well, you're in a doctor's office. So, like, the natural thing is they're going to tell you what their symptomology is and why they came to the doctor. But I like to play around with how people answer that question to see how quickly I can divert the topic without being rude or without being like ridiculously obvious. Like if I said, how are you? And someone said, oh my God, I'm sicker than a dog. I'll say, dogs, what about dogs? You know, if I did that, that would be kind of like almost dumb. I mean, people would go, you're weird. Not that I think being weird is a problem, because I've lived with that label all my life. Thank you to I'll do a shout out to my sisters, Debbie and Jennifer. They've always called me weird. And eventually I really embraced it and went, ooh, I really like being weird. That makes me unique and special. And
there
they go, that's not what we said. I'm like, well, that's what I took from it. But anyway, I mean, if people want to go down a road of talking about their maladies or what's not working for them, I like to take that as a fun challenge to see, one, how long can I endure in the negative space before I find a way to turn it around? And two, how creative and artistic can I shift the conversation in a way that the other person doesn't even realize that I've done it? Because it feels so natural to, like, go down the road that I've taken them.
That's an art form. I mean, if you really do have success doing that, then I give you, you know, cap off to you for being able to do that. Because I have actually tried that with people. And the thing that I've noticed, particularly those who are chronically complaining about, you know, various medical conditions they have, is it doesn't matter how much you distract them, they will always find a way to go back to it. So if you find a way out, let me know. I want to know how it works.
Well, and of course it depends. Are you talking to them on the phone, or are you in an email conversation, or is it in person? In person in my house, sometimes, like, let's say we're down in my living room where the kitchen is right next to it. It's an open concept thing. Sometimes it's as simple as, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to go get a drink. Do you want something? And that sometimes will break their pattern, and then they lose track of what they were talking about. Because now I'm saying, well, I have this or this or this. What would you like? And do you want it with ice? You know? Do you want a glass? Do you want it in plastic? I mean, I can come up with all sorts of options to kind of get their mind off of what they were talking about.
You obviously have different friends from the ones that I have had in the past who have these little things going, because they have absolutely no problem with saying, oh yeah, I'd like to have a Coke over ice. And by the way, my lumbago is driving me nuts. I mean, they'll just go right back into it.
Well, and that's where, for me, it's fun, and I make it a game. I don't make it a chore. I don't go, oh, it's an exercise I have to do, or it's on my homework list to learn how to be a better deliberate creator. It's like, no, it's a game. It's like, okay, can I artfully spin this conversation in the way that they don't even realize it, but it makes us all feel better? And I mean, I'll just be looking for whatever little somethings I can shift things around. You know,
well, I'll say this. If there's anybody who can do it, it's you, because we've already agreed you are the number one Pollyanna of anybody I've ever met. So I totally agree. You probably are very good at this. And I should probably just shut up so you can explain to me how it's done. But I just want to say you probably are really good at this.
Well, and something I learned from Tony Robbins a long time ago is physiology is the quickest method for changing your state of being. So physiology meaning moving your body or doing something different with your body. And so I've been known to just make an outrageous move. Like if I'm with somebody in person, if I just do something outrageous, that sometimes alone can cause them to change, like lose their train of thought. And when I say outrageous, I mean like if, okay, so like I've had this before where I'm sitting at Discount Tire and I'm waiting for my tires to be rotated and the person next to me decides to strike up a conversation and they start going down the road of something that's just like, oh, kill me now. This conversation is like way too on the negative side.
Hmm.
I'll do something like I'll pretend, or sometimes it really happens, like I spilled something or like I'm sitting on something that's wet. And I'll like jump up and they'll go, oh, what happened? And then I'll start talking about this other something. And before you know it, we've kind of left whatever they were talking about. Or it's at least diffused the intensity of it. So if they come back to the conversation because they sort of lost their place, they've lost their momentum, it's kind of less exciting to them, and it kind of dwindles on its own. So
that's pretty cool then, because I mean a lot of the examples I was talking about were people who are complaining about maladies, right? So basically what you're using is physiology to overcome their discussion about their physiology,
just simply to break their pattern.
Yeah.
Break their focus, break their concentration. Yeah,
that's pretty clever. I like that. I'm going to have to remember that one. Excuse me, I gotta get up
Robbins
now.
He calls it breaking your state. Mm-hmm. And he state representing your state of being.
Right.
And there's all sorts of things you can do. You can even change the tone of your voice. You can go, whoa! And they'll go, huh, what's that? And I'm like, oh, sorry, I just thought of something and wanted to bookmark it. Never mind. what were you trying to say?
No, don't say what were you trying to say. Go back to something else.
But no, I mean, sometimes I do that on purpose just to see what happens. And they'll go, I don't remember where I am. I'm like, well, you know what? I wanted to tell you about this other thing. I happen to notice you have this beautiful scarf on. And the whole time we've been talking, I've been noticing it. Where did you get it? And boom, we're off onto something else.
Well, that's good. That's really good.
Now, those are all different ways to distract. But, you know, coming back to what Abraham was talking about, and this is something that I truly wanted to become artful at.
Okay.
Which is when somebody is in front of me or in conversation with me and they're talking about something really unpleasant, or they're talking about their state of being that really sucks, or they don't have any money to go to college, or, you know, they can't buy their groceries or something, whatever it might be. If I, without even speaking a word, if I can go inside of my own mind and say to myself, okay, if I were to have a conversation with their inner being, what would their inner being tell me who they really are? And I guarantee you, their inner being would say, they are wealthy beyond belief. Because every time they've had a negative monetary scenario, they've had an unconscious asking for what they preferred, which is to have money. And their inner being is already resonating to that vibration of their wealth. And so the practice is to find a way for me to flip my inner switch from following what they're saying to going into an understanding or imagination of who I know they probably really are. And so I remember a long time ago, I heard Abraham talking about somebody in the hot seat was talking about how Jesus healed the sick and how cool that was. And Abraham said, well, here's what Jesus had the ability to do. It wasn't so much that he had the ability to heal or not to heal, because people heal themselves. But Jesus was able to have a person dripping with illness in front of them, and he saw it not.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite a skill.
Meaning, he did not see their illness as in, he probably saw it with his physical eyes, but it's like he was not focused on the illness. He focused on their wellness. He focused on who they really are. And when I heard that, and this was maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, I went, I want to do that.
Mm.
That would be, I'm not saying I want to be a Messiah.
No,
I'm not saying I want to be a Jesus. But what I'm saying is I want to have the ability to so naturally tap into somebody's wellness that just by doing that, when I'm tapped into their wellness, I'm vibrating wellness. And if a person is even open to receiving wellness, they can be swept up by the emotional state that I'm offering. And I've experienced that in my life. Not always, now, I'm not thinking right now of a situation that has to do with health, but I remember I was having a conversation in my living room with one of my dear friends, and she was going down a really negative spiral of all sorts of yucky things that she didn't like going on in her life. And as I was listening, now, this was a number of years ago, so what my skill set was and how I thought then has shifted and is in a better place today. But back then I was practicing, I don't want to focus on all the yucky that she's talking about. I want to focus on who I know she really is and what she's really capable of. And when she came to a kind of a natural stopping place, you know, paragraph, period, you know, take a breath, I just started talking about who I knew she really was. And I called her by name and I said, you know, I have seen some really incredible things that you've done in your life. And I know that what you're talking about right now doesn't feel like it's one of them. But I said, the fact that you've done it before in that other area, I know you can do it here too. And I said, it just seems to me that what you're talking about and how you're talking doesn't even feel like this is who you really are. And she kind of looked at me and went, huh? I said, this is who you really are. I said, who you really are is strong and powerful and capable. And I said, think of all these things. Just, you know, I named some things that personally she had done. Mm-hmm. I said, that's who you really are. Wouldn't you agree? And she went, well, yeah. And I said, don't you, and because I have good rapport with her, I could go down this road. Mm-hmm. Don't you feel a little bit stupid even sitting here with me talking about all these things that aren't even who you really are? And she went, well, yeah, I kind of, yeah. And I just kind of spun her, if you will. I kind of rampaged her into who I knew she really was. And I was reminding her of who she knew she really was.
Yeah.
And before you knew it, she went, oh my God, Wendy, don't know what you did, don't know how you did it, but I feel awesome. I said, oh, you don't want to feel like a victim anymore? She goes, no, I feel strong and powerful. I'm like, okay, yay.
Very good.
Yeah. And I knew that that was an experience where I'm like, oh, like Jesus, I saw her wellness not, or her unwellness. I saw her as who she really is. And that is one of those profound experiences that stick out in my life where I can look back at that and go, I can have a positive influence, and it is made so easy when I look at them and I see their illness not, when I see their troubles not, when I see their lack of money not, but when I see them for who I know they really are. And that's fun. That it's a game to me,
sure.
But not a game as in trivial.
No.
I look at it in terms of game because, you know, I approach almost everything like it's a game because that's what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm.
But that to me is the kind of fun that has such a profound positive impact that I'm like, okay, I want to keep doing more of this. I want to do more of this because this is fun.
Well, it also has a profound impact on you. It has a profound impact on you too, doesn't it? Because what you're really practicing is not falling for reality. That's what we're learning with this whole how to be deliberate creator thing. We're trying to learn how not to limit ourselves to whatever we see going on really right now, and to imagine instead what we want it to be, which is often very hard to do, particularly when that reality is, you know, basically shoving itself in our faces and saying, I want you to feel exactly what's going on here, and especially if it's miserable, I want you to feel what's going on here, because this is where all your attention should be. That's what tends to happen in those situations. So when we can practice and succeed in sitting differently, we are really making victorious strides toward our own goal of becoming deliberate creators, and that's exactly what you were doing with her.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I even wonder how many people might be listening to this podcast that they're thinking in the back of their minds, oh my God, I am a reality junkie. I do stay really tuned in to what's going on and not what I want it to be. And when other people are talking about, you know, negative stuff, I kind of join in and I add to it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know that's one of the things I experienced in my life that started to turn me around. is I realized I was adding negative fuel to their negative fire.
True. I do the same thing.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I thought, who do I want to be? And who am I? And my answer, I'm an influencer for good. I want to influence anybody and everybody who is open to it. I want to be able to influence them into feeling better. That's not only what I want to do, it's who I am. It's my identity. I'm an influencer for good. And so it just stands to reason that in the moments I catch myself adding to somebody's negative fuel, I go, whoa, that's not who I am. That's not who I am, I say inside my head. I don't say out loud to them. And at that moment, I shut up. I am not going to consciously, let's say it that way, consciously add to somebody's negative fuel.
Hmm.
I want them to run out of gas.
Yeah, right. And then you can pick them up on the side of the road so they don't freeze to death, but not until.
There you go. There you go. And I think that's really the heart of this little section that we're reading with Abraham is, you know, they're saying, don't be, you know, a what is junkie. You know, don't jump on the bandwagon with somebody who has a sad luck story. You know, the kindest, most loving thing you can do is to tap into who they really are. And if you're not quite sure how to tap into who they really are, then just think the most positive thing that they might want in this given situation. Just think on that. And I think it's pretty easy to recognize if somebody's begging on the side of the street and they're truly hungry. I'm not talking about the ones who like aren't really hungry, but it's just what they do for a living, beg. But the ones that are truly hungry, okay, well, if someone's truly hungry, what they want is they want their bellies full.
Mm.
You know, and so picture them feeling full, you know, and think whatever thoughts you can think of that you know could match their situation. You know, somebody who's been through some atrocity through a war. What they want is probably peace, to feel a sense of relief, to not feel scared. So what can you work on? You know, how do you turn this around? You know, look at that person knowing that their inner being is holding for them a safe space.
You know, as you describe that, and you made reference to the fact that there are some people who just kind of beg for a living, I'm reminded that the same friend I'm telling you about, he himself has been homeless. He's not currently homeless, but he has been homeless. He's been in really bad addictive situations and so forth. And he actively can tell us, you know, if anywhere that we're going around town or the towns in the area, wherever you see somebody who's holding up one of those homeless signs, he can tell us who each one of those people are, what their addictions are, what their problems are. He knows them all personally. Mm. And it's quite an education, actually, to talk to him, because he'll talk about this one person that we've seen a lot of. He says, oh, yeah, he's a raging drug addict. Don't give him anything. He's just going to spend it on drugs. Doesn't matter where it is. Or another person who, she's out there all the time. I see her all the time. The funny thing about her is she always seems to find a place to sleep, even though she's supposedly homeless, which is pretty weird. But nevertheless, she can do that. he tells stories like that about these various people that he knows. And one of the things that Louise started to do is she started to go to like a local, you know, fast food chain or whatever and get like $5 gift cards, so that if she saw somebody like that and she wasn't sure whether or not that person was just kind of begging for a living or they really were in need of help, then she could hand them a card. And the only thing they can do is spend it on the food at that place. So if they really want food, okay, they can go get their food. Interesting thing happens when you do that. You can see it on their faces. Like the little cardboard signs they make, right? They say, homeless, mm-hmm. please help. Okay, well, you're helping. You're giving them a card. And you can always tell which ones are the ones who really need the help, because the ones who really need the help, when they say thank you very much, they all say thank you very much, I'm so grateful, God bless you, that kind of thing. But you can see on their faces which ones are the ones that are genuine. The other ones are saying that while they're trying to think to themselves, how can I turn this into cash? You can actually see it on their faces. It's really interesting to watch.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you what my inner dialogue was while you were talking.
Okay.
And I'm not suggesting that anybody does this, but this is just kind of the silliness that goes inside of my head. But it really points to the practice and the artistry of figuring out ways to turn things around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, not every idea I have is something I want to implement, but it does show you my creativity.
Okay, well, if you want to show off a little bit, that's okay.
When you were talking about Louise handing somebody a gift card for McDonald's, my thought was, well, I have two different things. Don't shoot me on the first one. Oh, I don't want a gift card. I don't really need money. But I know somebody who does, so I'll trade them. I'll trade them for something else. So that's one way. The other one was, then you talked about the cardboard sign, and I went, you know what? If I saw the same person week after week and they had the same ready sign, I'd love to come back one week and like hand them a sign like made out of plexiglass or something like that. And I go, here's just a better looking sign. Good luck with this. I hope you get more money.
Well, that second one actually is not so crazy. And this is actually kind of a heartwarming one. There's a YouTube video you can look up that portrays this. There was a guy who was blind who was basically panhandling on the steps of something. I don't remember what it was. But he was just there, and you could tell he was just kind of dejected. He had this little box next to him and a sign that said, I'm blind, please help. And there were a few coins in the box and so forth. And then this woman walks up and sees the sign, picks up the sign, takes a marker out of her purse, writes something on the back of the sign, and then puts the sign down. You can't see what it said. All you can see is that she put it down there, and you can tell that the blind man knows that she's there, isn't sure what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You see a couple days later, and his box is overflowing with money. And then you see the same woman walk up. And by the way, you don't actually see who the woman is. All you see is her legs and her feet. You don't see anything above her knees. You just see her feet. And so he knows the feet because he remembers the sound. He reaches out, touches, yeah, it's the same person. And he says, what did you do to me? And she said, I didn't do anything to you. I just amended your sign. What did you say? I just took your words and made them better. What did you say? And then they finally show the sign on camera. On camera, what the sign says, it's a beautiful day. I wish I could see it.
Oh. That's so touching.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is an actual YouTube video. You can look that up.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day. I wish I could see it.
Yeah. It gets to you, doesn't it?
You know, I've always heard, you know, I've always known this to be true, that we buy something or don't buy something. And I'm saying this in terms of buying physical things versus buying ideas or concepts. We always do it based on a feeling or an emotion. And if you tug at somebody's heartstrings, you got them.
Yes.
And that was one of those touching stories that, like, if I saw that, you bet I'd give.
Of course.
You know, the I'm blind, please help, please give me money, please feed me. It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And by the way, it doesn't throw me in emotionally. And by the way, the point of that video was to do exactly what you said. It was to point out that all marketing is emotional.
All marketing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and the truth is we are marketing 24/7.
We are.
Whether we are selling a product or in conversation with somebody, because even when you're in a relationship, you're still selling yourself.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah. Not intentionally.
Wow.
It's not like we're trying to sell ourselves. It's just that's the way we do things.
Well, now I'm going to look at people's signs so differently. And I'm now going to start, here's part of my creative imagination, you know. I'm going to start thinking, what could their sign say that would tug at my heartstrings to cause me to want to give to them?
Mm-hmm.
Not, and, you know, people can say, well, but not everybody's worthy of being given to. I'm just saying, this is my creative workshop. This is how I play with new, it's how I brainstorm with myself and how I come up with new ideas. And I never know what's going to, like, make me go bing, 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 but I'm always looking for those, you know, what's going to do it.
Yeah.
The beautiful day, I wish I could see it. That's going to stick with me.
Yeah, it's a good message, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a really good one.
We've got only about 3 or 4 minutes left, but we also have a really short one up next. It's like one paragraph answer, one paragraph question. You want to do it?
I think we can handle it. Let's do it.
Let's go
Let's
for it.
Let's do it.
So the topic is, what if everyone got everything they wanted? And Jerry asks, let me play the part of devil's advocate here. If each of the selfish beings on the planet were getting everything they individually wanted, what kind of mess would this world be in? Interesting question.
And Abraham said, it would not be. Wait, it would not be and is not a mess for all. Okay, that was a hard sentence. It would not be and it is not a mess for all. For through the law of attraction, they would attract unto them those who are in harmony with their intent. You see, this is a very well-balanced place in which you live. There is some of everything here in enough proportion, abundance, and difference to give you all the ingredients for this vast and marvelous kitchen that you have come to participate in.
That's a nice positive way to end the day.
What if you got everything you wanted? Well, you know, I've heard them also say, well, actually, they asked a workshop participant one day. He talked about all these things that he wanted. And they said to him, would you really want all of that to be manifested right now? And he said, yes. And they said, you only think you would want it all right now. But the truth is, it would wreak so much havoc on your life for you to get everything all at one time. And they didn't go into a whole lot of detail, but I started playing with that, like, all right, so what if you wanted a new house and a new car and a new wardrobe, and you wanted a chef in your home, and you wanted a maid's quarters, and, you know, and I just started thinking of all these things, and I'm like, oh my gosh, if all of those were given to you on one day, that would be overwhelming. I mean, because I think about how long it takes to, like, move all my belongings if I'm going to move from one house to another. That's probably at least a month just in preparation, you know.
Yep.
But then it also takes you time if you're going to get a new car or how to, you know, I've had a housekeeper before, and it took me time to, like, figure out how the housekeeper did what they did, and I could communicate what needed to be communicated, and they didn't break the things I didn't want broken. And I just can't imagine getting everything on one day.
I have to agree. And one of the reasons I have to agree is I've experienced it. Not in one day, but in a 2-week period, we got a new house that we moved to, that we tried to find homes, couldn't, for two cats, brought two other cats with us to the new house, got two brand new cars after losing both of our cars that we previously had, all within a 2-week period. And that was overwhelming. Mm. Having that happen in one day, yeah, I'm not quite sure how I would have handled that one. All I know is it would be a lot.
And it's funny because Jerry is saying, what kind of mess would this world be in if everybody got what they wanted? And I think maybe I took it in the wrong direction, but Abraham's saying it would not be a mess because there's plenty of everything for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Every ingredient, everything that anybody and everybody wants is available to us.
Yeah.
And I do love knowing that.
And that's one of the reasons we do the podcast, because there are so many of us who will say, well, I don't have all the things that I want. And I have to say, honestly, I'm one of them. But the point is to be learning about this stuff and exploring it so that we can get better at allowing that stuff into our lives and allowing only the stuff that we want and excluding the stuff that we don't want by just refusing to pay attention to it. Well, that's the point. That's why we do this. And something as simple as that sounds like it really is, it turns out to be a lot more complex than what we thought. That's why we do the podcast. It's also, we like to do it because it's fun. That's the other reason. But
it is fun.
It's a lot of fun.
And I've told you this offline that, you know, I do the podcast every day from my big oversized purple velour chair. It's very comfy. But now that we've been doing the shows, I think I've done over 70 shows with you, which to me is amazing because I only started with you like right after Thanksgiving.
Right.
But because we do it every day, it's a lot of shows. But every time I walk past this purple chair, I am anchored to the feeling that I have when I'm in this purple chair.
Mm.
And I keep thinking, ooh, that's what I love. That's what I love. I love that feeling. And so it's really anchored me to this glorious feeling of feeling very satisfied and fulfilled.
That's great.
That's about being a deliberate creator.
Well, that's the high point we have to leave it on, because I don't even have time to do the usual stuff. So I'll see you next week, Wendy.
All right. Talk to you then.
All right. We hope you join us next time as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.